Welcome to the Fertility Stories podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Mary Sauden, ND. As a naturopathic doctor and fertility coach, I help women get calm, confident, and in control of their fertility. I'm passionate about helping women get pregnant and stay pregnant. This episode is brought to you by Fertility Fundamentals. Fertility Fundamentals is a naturopath-led collective of women supporting each other in their fertility journey. Join the collective for free at www.facebook.com/groups/fundamental fertility and come join your tribe. Welcome to the Fertility Stories podcast. In today's episode, I'll be talking about endometriosis, its causes, and possible genetic, environmental, and immune connection. So endometriosis is one of the most common yet misunderstood diseases, and it affects about 10 to 15% of menstruating women between 24 and 40 years. And in some cases, symptoms begin with the onset of menstruation, while in others, symptoms begin later and progressively become worse until menopause. The common triad of symptoms includes dysmenorrhea, which is pain with menses, dyspareunia, which is pain with vaginal intercourse, and infertility. Acute pain occurs before menstruation and can last for a day or two during menses or even throughout the month. So this pain can be a life-disrupting experience. It affects a woman's social relationships, work, school, well-being. For some women, vomiting, diarrhea, and fainting can occur with intense labor-like pains. Other pain is described as this chronic bearing down pain and pressure on the lower back and pelvis, sometimes radiating down the legs. Other less common complaints include pain with urination, pain with bowel movements, bleeding from the nose, bladder, and/or bowels. Endometriomas, which are enlarged areas of ectopic endometrial involvement on the ovaries, are found in 2 out of 3 patients with endometriosis. And early research as to the source of infertility initially led to the concept that endometriosis was a working woman's disease. Women who delayed pregnancy and later in life and were found to have endometriosis were told to just get pregnant. And current research does not support this concept. However, research as to altered immune action within the pelvic cavity and the possibility of antibody reactions to sperm has prompted recognition of an immunological basis for endometriosis. Other studies suggest that infertility is a cause of endometriosis due to the unruptured follicle rather than a result of endometriosis. So whether endometriosis causes infertility or infertility causes endometriosis, tubal scarring, adhesions, and unruptured follicles are common with women having endometriosis and infertility problems. The main risk factor for endometriosis is heredity. The likelihood for a woman who has a first-degree relative with severe endometriosis having endometriosis is 6 times higher than that for relatives of women without the disease. And women with menstrual cycles that are shorter in time between cycles and longer in length have been found to be at higher risk for endometriosis. Increased or altered estrogen levels, lack of exercise from an early age, a high-fat diet, and use of intrauterine devices have also been found to be risk factors. In a study, baboons who developed endometriosis in captivity were found to have higher stress levels and a decreased ability to react to stress compared to those in the wild, suggesting a stress factor. Individuals who exercised consistently from an early age reported a decreased risk for endometriosis, while those who began an exercise program later on experienced less painful periods. Although not all women with endometriosis have a childhood history of abuse, a greater number of individuals with adhesions and/or endometriosis have reported abuse in their history. Additional possible risk factors include prenatal exposure to high levels of estrogen and pelvic contamination with menstrual products. Although these issues are largely theory and research is needed. Physical examination that doctors do would reveal one or more of the following. So there will be tenderness of the pelvic area, or the cul-de-sac, which is the deep pouch anterior to the rectum. There could be enlarged or tender ovaries, a uterus that tips back or lacks mobility. You could have fixed pelvic structures and adhesions. Endometrial tissue can be found on surgical scar tissue in the vagina and on the cervix. And when you do a physical exam during the first or second day of menstruation, highlights tender areas in the septum between the rectum and vagina, most likely because of deep infiltrating endometriosis. So an ultrasound study can determine the consistency of the endometriomas, which are cysts of endometriosis within the ovary. And evidence of endometriosis other than on the ovaries cannot be seen on the ultrasound, although MRI can detect endometriomas cost, especially if it's a pay-per-use structure, like in the U.S., might prevent widespread use. A blood test called CA125 can have positive results in endometriosis. The problem is that a high CA125 cannot completely differentiate endometriosis from uterine fibroids or even cancerous growths in normal tissues. High levels of CA125 have been found in stages 3 and 4 of endometriosis, which is the diagnosis for more advanced disease states. So definitive diagnosis of endometriosis can only really be accomplished with surgery. So either you do a laparoscopy in which the surgeon inserts a scope through one or two small pelvic incisions, or a more invasive laparotomy, which is a more major pelvic or abdominal surgery. Endometrial implants or lesions are known to have similarities to uterine tissue, and growth of this tissue can be stimulated by estrogen. So therapeutic treatment aimed at kind of like manipulating the body's own level of hormones, as in menopause or pregnancy, has had a positive effect, especially in Western medicine. In some individuals, the implants have their own cycle with an ebb and flow that differ from the estrogen that is occurring during the normal menstrual cycle. So although the most commonly accepted theories of origin today kind of vary and sometimes seem contradictory, they all have their place in holistic approaches to the treatment of endometriosis. The predominant theory was first proposed in 1927 by Dr. John Albertson Sampson. And that's the theory of retrograde flow, that during menses, blood actually flows backward and becomes the seeds of implants in the pelvic cavity. And this theory and research shows that over 90% of menstruating women without endometriosis actually have retrograde flow. So this has raised questions as to, you know, maybe there's something else causing endometriosis and not just the theory of retrograde flow. Endometrial implants from women with endometriosis compared with normal women have been found to actually be biochemically different. So there's something going on in terms of immunity for sure. Other studies suggest that cells may only implant in women with altered cell immunity. And they actually have found endometrial implants found in the nose, in the lungs, in other organs far from the uterus. And they could be transported there through the lymphatic channels, through blood vessels. These have all been suggested in the theory and the research. Still, other researchers believe that endometriotic implants could be embryological of origin, like pieces of the uterus left behind during embryo development, which when becomes activated, they might secrete a chemical causing the nearby capillaries to bleed. Research on baboons with endometriosis suggests activation by environmental toxins that mimic estrogens. So, you know, whether implants are caused by retrograde flow or decreased immune function, genetics, environmental influences, or even embryological development, or if they're stimulated by high estrogen levels from the environment, the worsening of symptoms should prompt women to seek medical help, since there's not necessarily a correlation between pain and the extent of the disease. So women with, you know, fixed ovaries and large endometriomas may only report mild discomfort, while those with visibly smaller lesions may report severe and chronic pain. And upon surgery, these lesions are found to extend more deeply. So they are possibly more influenced by circulating estrogens. Research has found that the severity of symptoms is correlated with the depth of the lesions rather than the number of lesions. And the abnormalities found in women with endometriosis and the conditions that may predispose them to it are quite complex. So let's talk about some genetic factors. So groupings of endometriosis within certain families has been found in clinical studies, in population-based studies, and even studies of twins. Several analyses of the locations on the genes that are shared by siblings indicate abnormalities in detoxification enzymes. So this would lead to susceptibilities to environmental exposures to substances that could then lead to the increase in the disease. You know, other insights have included that the genes involved are associated with tumor suppressor genes. And if these tumor suppressor genes are affected, there is susceptibility to abnormal tissue growth, such as endometriosis. Other factors that might cause endometriosis are environmental factors. So information about environmental influences on endometriosis in humans has been gleaned by observing the negative effects of environmental exposures on rhesus monkeys. So radiation exposure and dioxin exposure have led to higher frequency of developing endometriosis in monkeys. So it would seem possible to extend this consideration to women, especially when it was reported that the highest dioxin pollution in the world was in Belgium, which also has the highest incidence of severe endometriosis. And in two studies since, however, one in Belgium found no significantly increased risk with dioxins or polychlorinated biphenyls. And in Italy, no significantly increased risk of endometriosis was seen in women who had high levels of dioxin. Although currently there is no epidemiological study definitively linking any one class of chemicals to the risk of endometriosis. Although there appears to be some suggestion of a link with estrogen-like compounds in the environment called xenoestrogens, which can disrupt estrogen and estrogen metabolism. So substances that have been shown to have estrogenic effects in the body include PCBs or polychlorinated biphenyls, weed killers, substances that line cans, plastics, detergents, and household cleaners. So despite this lack of identification of a definitive link between chemical exposures and endometriosis, we do know that women are exposed to a multitude of chemicals in utero, in childhood, peripubertally, and as adults. And we can identify chemicals in cosmetics, nail polish, plastics, household cleaners, dry cleaning, and foods. So I would assert that the roles of toxic chemicals in reproductive health should not be underestimated, and that scientific investigations that suggest a correlation should be motivation enough to reduce our toxic exposure, our toxic load, to chemical estrogen-like compounds that disrupt our own body's hormone-receptive tissues. Now, let's delve further into the immune connection of endometriosis. Increasingly, we are finding evidence that a lack of proper surveillance by the immune system in the pelvic area is the cause of endometriosis. And alterations in other aspects of the immune system are involved in the progression of this disease. So in studies on the immune functions of baboons with spontaneous endometriosis, researchers have found a correlation between suppressed immunity and a higher number and greater area of lesions. So both types of immunity, which are cell-mediated and humoral, have been implicated in endometriosis, with immunological defects present even in the mildest forms of the disease. So macrophages, which are a kind of white blood cell that scavenge other microbes, debris, and bad tissues, are actually found in greater numbers in the early stages of endometriosis. And this increase in macrophage activity may correlate with decreased fertility and possible reaction to sperm perceived by the woman's body as foreign. When they looked at the peritoneal fluid, or fluid that's aspirated from the area in the abdominal pelvic wall of women with severe endometriosis, they found that natural killer cell activity has been repressed or suppressed. Natural killer cells release cell toxins and help keep tumors and other abnormal cells in check. So a decrease in this natural killer cells is actually quite bad. Immune defense against the growth of tissue is decreased. So studies suggest a correlation between high estradiol levels and decreased killer cell activity. While that's the cell-mediated kind of immunity that affects endometriosis, there is the humoral kind of immunity. And this humoral immunity is the one that produces antibodies, more specifically immunoglobulins. And these immunoglobulins provide protection to the body by their attachment to foreign substances called antigens. And patients with endometriosis have been found to have high levels of IgG and IgM when compared with normal controls. So higher than normal amounts of immunoglobulins cause destruction of the body's own tissue, as we can see in most autoimmune conditions. Evidence of high levels of autoantibodies against ovarian and endometrial cells is consistent with the finding of individuals who have both endometriosis and autoimmune disease. So there's definitely an autoimmune component possibly in endometriosis. So endometriosis is definitely a very complex disease with a variety of interconnecting influences, enhancing the immune system, the endocrine system, even the liver's detoxification of hormones is really needed, reducing and blocking pro-inflammatory chemicals produced by the body, and providing optimal health in the large intestine represents innovative and effective approaches to the treatment of endometriosis. You know, considering the long-term consequences of endometriosis, which are pain, disability, and disruption in personal, family, and work activities, we definitely need innovative approaches that treat the whole body and remove the cause. And this will hopefully help more women with endometriosis.
If you enjoyed today's episode, subscribe to the Fertility Stories podcast and leave a review. Let's keep this conversation going. Do you have a story that you want to share or a topic you want covered? Head on over to the Fertility Fundamentals Facebook group and let me know. I've got a new episode coming your way next week. Until then, let's all do something amazing for yourselves and others.